It is possible that Luna's radio transmitter had been programmed to switch off before touchdown, or, as he put it, that something was ejected that would continue operating. Luna 15 landed in the Sea of Crises, about 800 kilometers from the site of Apollo 11 in the Sea of Tranquility. The Soviet Union has made no comment about the latest maneuver of the spacecraft, which was launched July 13th. President Nixon interrupted his moon mission watch today to confer with Gerard Smith, head of the U.S. Arms Control and Disarmament Agency. New Secretary Ronald Ziegler said they discussed subjects expected to come up in the proposed U.S.-Soviet talks on limitation of strategic arms. He added that the president has not yet heard from Soviet officials on a date or meeting place. But he said Mr. Nixon hopes the talks will begin sometime between the end of July and August 15th. Police in Nairobi said today they have arrested a man on charges of murder in the death of Tom Mboya, Kenya's economic and planning minister, who was shot to death on a Nairobi sidewalk earlier this month. The suspect was identified as Nahashon Isaac Njenga Njoroge. Dispatches said he is a Kikuyu, a member of Kenya's majority tribal grouping. Mr. Mboya was a member of the Luo tribe. Claims by Luos that Kikuyus were responsible for the July 5th murder led to outbreaks of rioting in the capital and along the funeral procession route. Police declined to give any details of today's arrest, but said their investigation is continuing. The suspect is reported under heavy security and is expected to appear before a magistrate's court on August the 5th. Israel and Egypt engaged in several exchanges of artillery fire along the Suez Canal today, including the Bitter Lake, Firdan, and the North Kandara areas. Israel said two of its soldiers were wounded. Earlier today, Israel denied an Egyptian report of heavy Israeli shelling of the city of Suez at the southern tip of the waterway. Algerian President Houari Boumediene today described the first Pan-African festival, which opened in Algiers, as the greatest assembly of arts and letters ever held on the continent. Speaking to 4,000 African artists and performers, President Boumediene called the 10-day festival a new stage in the struggle against all forms of domination. He said its purpose is to make the arts into an instrument of social revolution in the continent's fight for liberation and development. Other speakers hailed the festival as a historic stage in the cultural renaissance of Africa. An official announcement from Lagos reports that the Nigerian Air Force destroyed two gun-running aircraft yesterday over Biafra's Uli Ihiala airstrip. Describing the fight as a decisive, fierce air battle, the Federal Information Ministry said one of the planes exploded in the air when hit and crashed in flames on the runway. Earlier, Radio Biafra claimed Biafran troops had recaptured a town near their former capital, Umahia, and had penetrated the southern suburbs of Umahia. There has been no comment from Lagos on the Biafran report. The United States will issue new regulations Wednesday, easing restrictions on travel to communist China and trade with that country. A State Department spokesman said Americans abroad would be permitted to bring into the United States limited quantities of goods originating in communist China for non-commercial purposes. And he said the new regulations will authorize validation of passports for travel to China for certain categories of people. These include congressmen, journalists, teachers, scholars, college students, physicians, scientists, and Red Cross representatives. The spokesman said the action is consistent with the desire of the Nixon administration to relax tensions and develop peaceful contacts between the American and Chinese people. A United States congressional committee took a step toward tax reform today by reducing a controversial tax exemption given to the oil and gas industry. The House Ways and Means Committee cut the so-called oil depletion allowance from 27.5% to 20%. The reform must be approved by the entire House before the Senate can act on it. A complaint was filed against Senator Edward Kennedy in Edgerton, Massachusetts today, charging him with leaving the scene of an automobile accident. A young woman was killed and Senator Kennedy slightly injured early Saturday when the car he was driving ran off a bridge. The senator, who said he was in a state of shock after the accident, did not report it to police for several hours. The police chief who filed the complaint said a lawyer representing the senator had petitioned for a hearing to be held next Monday. The new United States ambassador to West Germany, Kenneth Rush, arrived in Bonn today to take up his post. In an airport statement, Ambassador Rush noted the staunch partnership, which has existed for almost a generation between the United States and the Federal Republic. He said it would be his chief aim to strengthen that cooperation. Ambassador Rush succeeds Henry Cabot Lodge, now chief U.S. delegate to the Paris talks on Vietnam. That's the news from the Voice of America newsroom. This is Harry Monroe reporting.
From the VOA Apollo News Center in Washington, from the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston, Texas, the Voice of America is on the air throughout the world, bringing you live coverage of the flight of Apollo 11. We're now 127 minutes and, rather, 127 hours and 37 minutes into that flight. The two spacecraft, Eagle, the lunar landing craft, and Columbia, the command module, are still behind the moon. We should have signal and reacquire the two craft in about 14 minutes from now. At that time, they should have completed all of their orbital maneuvers and should be near rendezvous at about 110 kilometers above the surface of the moon. This coming, some 3.5 hours, or actually about 4 hours, after liftoff from the surface of the moon at 17 hours 54 Greenwich Mean Time. A very successful liftoff, a 7-minute firing of that 1,500 kilogram engine, the thrust of 1,500 kilograms. Norm Guerin?
Well, Bill, we were talking about the docking maneuver. There are a couple of little things that we've discussed, I think, on other missions, but once in a while they refer to a hard and a soft dock. Perhaps either John or Bill could tell us what that means if we hear it again this time.
John Hammersmith, that's when we get up very close. And let me ask this question before you answer that, John. Will the command module be the active spacecraft this time, or will it be the lunar module?
Well, the lunar module is active for the rendezvous, but it is easier to for the command module to play the active role in the actual docking, that is the final linking up. And Bill Land, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that'll be the way they'll do it this time.
That's right, John. The command module will do the docking maneuver itself. They have much better visibility out of the windows, or he has, Mike Collins.
Mike Collins, who is alone.
Out of his window than do the men in the lunar module. Neil Armstrong has what is called a docking window overhead, but that's a considerable strain to look up overhead and conduct the maneuver in a manner where his eyesight is in one direction and his arms on the controls are in another direction, and trying to translate those two directions into a direction of motion is very difficult.
We tried it on Apollo 9 with the lunar module playing the active role for the final docking, and it turned out the way the astronauts expected it to. That was doing it the hard way. The command module pilot had good visibility all the way through and could have wrapped it up in very short order.
Well, then we come to Norm Guerin's question about the
what we call soft docking and hard docking?
Well, fortunately, the terms are not analogous to soft landing and hard landing. The soft docking occurs when they make a mechanical, finally make a mechanical connection, and we call it we say the dock is hard when the mechanical connection is latched up so that the two spacecraft are as it were bolted together firmly so that the two spacecraft then behave to all intents and purposes as a single unit.
Then that probe and the drogue are removed in the tunnel, are they not? Once you have a hard docking and it is secure, and then the astronauts at both ends, that is Mike Collins in the command and service module, and Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong in the lunar module, Eagle, remove these...
These are just mechanical aids. The probe and drogue are just mechanical aids to finally steer the docking mechanisms into a good latching arrangement. And yes, after the things have been firmed up, then these devices can be removed and the tunnel between the two spacecraft opened.
Well, I would imagine that all three astronauts would be ready for a long rest period once all of these functions are completed. Of course, the docking is not the last thing they have to do. They have to take care of the lunar module, the powering down of the lunar module, the removal of the lunar samples, the photographic equipment, and so on, in bringing it into the command and service module, and then, of course, eventually undocking. And I believe they do fire the lunar module engine by remote control after that, Bill?
Bill, no, they won't this time. Okay. On this mission, the ground does have a capability to control the ascent stage after they have jettisoned the LEM. However, they won't exercise that control beyond possibly doing a few attitude control maneuvers just to ensure that they do have that control. On this mission, though, the crew is, as you mentioned, they've been extremely busy for this past day, but they will have considerable activity after docking, mainly housekeeping activity. We went through an explanation of some of the decontamination procedures they'll be going through, but besides that, they do have the probe and drogue to stow away. They do have all of the film and the lunar sample containers, their suits, the other articles that they will be returning in the command module. They'll have to get those across and stowed away in the command module. In order to find room for them, some articles out of the command module will be transferred the other way and be put into the lunar module such that when they jettison them, they'll be rid of those things that just take up room and are no longer necessary.
Excess baggage.
That's right. So there's considerable activity here, but most of it is in what we call a housekeeping type of activity.
They're not really going to get a rest until they start on their way back toward Earth early tomorrow morning, although there is a contingency built into the plan. I think it's about 12 hours they could remain in lunar orbit for something like 12 hours and still adhere to roughly the same return times if that should become necessary or highly desirable.
Yes, they do have. I forgot about that. We have this very important maneuver called TEI, trans-Earth injection. That is firing of the spacecraft Columbia's main engine.
That'll take place close to 1 a.m. our time here, Bill.
That would be close to 5 hours Greenwich Mean Time. Of course,
another maneuver that takes place on the opposite side of the moon from us, so that there'll be that waiting period to see how it all worked out.
Well, this question I've asked, I suppose, a number of times, John, but why do we fire it on the backside of the moon, and we have to wait that long period for confirmation?
Well, it's again the old story, Bill, that the most efficient time to to make this type of maneuver is on a, at a point roughly opposite, directly opposite the Earth on the other side of the Moon. If we wait until the spacecraft is in sight of the Earth, then it would take, in order to put it on a trajectory toward the Earth, it would take a radically different and a radical increase in amount of propellant to get it on that kind of a trajectory. Since the maneuver is performed entirely on board the spacecraft by the crew, it really doesn't make a lot of difference whether it's done inside of the Earth or on the opposite side of the Moon.
As a matter of fact, you can think of it just the way these other maneuvers were conducted when we wanted to raise the Apolloon or the Apocynthian or whatever we choose to call it at the moment. We would burn on one side of the Moon, and then that orbit would increase on the opposite side of the Moon. So on the opposite side of the Moon, we would have our high point. Well, we're doing the same thing now, only we're increasing that high point to such an extent that really it brings it back to the Earth.
Distance, that's right.
Well, why is it the trip back, once you fire out of the lunar pull of lunar gravity and on that path back home, why is that return trip faster than the one going out?
We're adding more energy than, relatively speaking, than we did when we went out is probably the simplest way to put it. We're coming back on a trajectory that has more energy in it than one that we went out on. At the Moon, though, it's a lot simpler to do that because it takes less power, less energy in the spacecraft engine to do the job, because escaping the lunar gravity is quite a simple task compared to that of escaping the Earth's gravity. However, when we get to that midpoint, I think you remember that about 30,000 miles from the Moon, we reach that point where the Earth's gravity and the Moon's gravity have an equal pull on a spacecraft. Well, when we left the Earth and got to that point going out, we were going some roughly 2,000 miles an hour at that point. When we come back, we'll be going faster at that point, so the Earth's pull then will speed us up greater than the speed we were going when we left the Earth.
And the speed keeps increasing as we finally come into the full pull of the Earth's gravity. In fact, that re-entry speed is what, about 24 to 25,000 miles an hour when we hit what we call entry interface.
That's about right. If you have a conversion table there, it's about 36,000 feet per second. I do recall that. But to explain a little further, Bill, what you touched on there, just as we leave the Moon, just after we burn the SPS engine on the backside of the Moon, we will increase our speed at that point, and from that point on, we will begin to slow down until we get approximately 30,000 miles away from the Moon, at which time the Earth's gravity takes hold, and we will speed up from that point on until we reach the Earth's atmosphere, and that'll be the only time we begin to slow down again, and we take advantage of the Earth's gravity to pull us back home.
I might add, I think we should say something, Bill, about the shorter trip time. And the trip time isn't shorter because we're in a hurry.
You're not speeding it up
to get back, no. As compared to going out. You run into some complicated geometrical and dynamic relationships, and which make you do these things. And two of the simpler things that you take into consideration is the distance of the Moon and the Earth from each other. I'm not sure, but I believe that the Moon is a little bit closer to the Earth at this time than it was when we went into lunar orbit. The other thing is that we want to come out, have that return into the Pacific recovery area. We like that area for these lunar missions.
We have about 1 minute until acquisition of signal from the spacecraft Eagle and Columbia. Let's go back to the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston and correspondent Rhett Turner.
I think that Apollo Control is going to talk us into that, so we'll stand by in about 20 seconds now to go to the Apollo Control Center. 1 minute and 12 seconds until expected acquisition of signal from the command module. We're clocking only one AOS now, since we assume that the two spacecraft are together.
127 hours, 50 minutes, ground elapsed time. Less than a minute now away from acquisition of the spacecraft Columbia. Hopefully, flying within a few feet of it will be Eagle. Docking should take place about 10 minutes from now, according to the flight plan. However, this is a crew option matter. We're standing by for word that data is coming in from the two spacecraft.
About 20 seconds. Acquisition of signal may take a few seconds after that telemetry locks in. We may hear a lot of noise again. 5 seconds till expected AOS.
This is Lunar Revolution number 27 for Columbia.
Mike Collins really going in circles. kilometers per hour and they're moving. About 111 kilometers above the moon. Should have AOS now.
I have LEM AOS.
Acquisition of signal from the lunar module from Eagle. Waiting for acquisition of signal from the command module now. In mission control, all of the engineers have sat back down at their consoles. We now hear the air-to-ground loop. If the capsule communicator says anything, we'll hear it, and likewise the astronauts. Lunar module Eagle's signal has locked in. No comment from either Neil Armstrong or Buzz Aldrin yet. This acquisition of signal time was according to the orbital parameters of the command module. They knew exactly when it would come around. It has not burned its thrusters at all, so from all of the tracking data, it was a positive factor that the command module would come into view at exactly the time anticipated. You just haven't locked in signals yet, apparently. Either that or we haven't had that lock-in confirmed to us. It's possible Mike Collins is busy talking to the lunar module through his VHF communications between the two spacecraft, and we wouldn't hear it here on Earth. They could be talking to each other quite actively at this moment, and we would not hear it. He also, Collins may be too busy to align his transmitting antennas also, as happened on one of the earlier revolutions a few hours ago. Had considerable difficulty in locking in one of his omni or non-directional antennas, and we didn't get good transmissions from him until the high gain antenna. Those four dish antennas were aimed at the Earth. The two spacecraft should be right alongside, flying in formation, going around the moon in orbit together, just a few meters apart. Mission control looking rather quiet. Everyone, every engineer at his console.
Okay, Mike.
That's Neil.
I'll get try to get in position here, and then you got it.
Neil's getting in position for Mike to then effect the docking. Neil's pulling up close, and then Mike is to go ahead and be the active docker.
How does the roll attitude look?
That's Mike. Maybe that was Neil. Possibly that was Neil. His voice went up just a bit as he asked the question. Mike Collins in the command module, Neil Armstrong in the LEM.
I can stop right here if you like that.
That's Neil Armstrong saying he can stop right here if you like. He's in the lunar module in Eagle. Mike Collins in Columbia, the command craft. They are station keeping, preparing for the docking. This is coming a few minutes early, apparently. The space pilots, quite serious, going straight about their business. We're docking the two spacecraft, Columbia and Eagle, the lunar module and the command module of Apollo 11, beginning to move together for connecting or docking. They have completed the rendezvous during the past 3 hours since liftoff from the moon. The lunar module must connect or dock with the command craft in order for the two astronauts inside to safely return to the command craft. There is an emergency method of climbing outside in their pressurized spacesuits and going around and inside the hatch of the command craft, or the command module, but the docking is much preferred because then the transfer of the astronauts can all be done inside through the tunnel. The lunar module, Eagle, with Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin aboard, now beginning to effect the docking with the command module, Mike Collins aboard.
Eagle, Houston, Middle Gimbal, and you might pass to Columbia. We don't have him yet.
That's right.
Still no signal from Columbia with Mike Collins aboard. Waiting for a signal from Mike Collins from Columbia. The command module. They're very, very close together now. And I'm sure that all three of the pilots are quite busy at this moment. They are talking to each other much more than they are talking back to the Earth or keying the proper transmitters for us to monitor them here on Earth. In orbit around the moon, they just came around the east side in their 27th revolution of the moon, 27th rev for the command module. They're sticking pretty close to the timeline of events.
I'm not going to do a thing, Mike. I'm just letting her hold in attitude hold.
Neil Armstrong says, I'm not doing a thing, Mike. I'm just letting her hold in attitude hold. Mike said, okay, we could hear one quick word from Mike Collins in the command module. He now will move forward and line up the pilot's reference marks on his window with a target device mounted on the top of the limb, the lunar module. When he lines these devices up through his own sighting devices, then the docking tunnels, the probe and drogue, should be in line with the lunar module docking mechanism. We should be docked within the next minute. We will stand by for any conversation from the lunar module or the command module. The signal you're hearing, the noise in the background, of course, is the sound of the signal coming from the moon back to the Earth. The receiver, which is tuned in through this unified S-band system to the lunar module and the command module. Big tracking dishes in California, Spain, and Australia. Online, whichever one happens to be in view with the moon at this moment, bringing back these signals. Neil Armstrong reported that he isn't doing a thing except holding attitude. Mike said, okay, here comes something, I believe. One of the transmitters was keyed there briefly. Standing by for anything from either Mike Collins or Neil Armstrong or Buzz Aldrin. So far, the only conversations we have heard or only comments have been through the transmitter being keyed by Neil Armstrong in the lunar module in Eagle. This docking has turned out to be a rather simple thing when done by the command module. As you heard reported a little earlier by John Hammersmith, it proved to be much more difficult when the men aboard the lunar module tried to do it. They have one small window overhead called the docking window, and translating your hand motions when you're having to look straight up over your head proved to be just a little difficult in transferring those into the proper movements when the rest of your body is in a different plane. the command module, Mike Collins, going about the docking with the lunar module Eagle. The signal getting very noisy now. I presume that one of the antennas has drifted out from one of the spacecraft. The lock, the radio or radar lock on the unified S-band receiver here on Earth is apparently drifting out slightly from one. Neil Armstrong said, "Hey, Mike," we could hear through the static. There was the word, "Okay." They are talking to each other, apparently. Quite a bit of static, quite a bit of noise being transmitted back to Earth now. The docking coming right according to the timeline schedule in the flight plan, just as expected, as the flight plan was laid out weeks ago, as a matter of fact. This part of the flight being carried out to the letter, just about, by three space pilots in Apollo 11, Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, and Mike Collins. At this moment, the two spacecraft have come around over the lighted portion of the moon. The crescent, as you look at it from here on Earth, at this part of its monthly cycle, the landing site, the site from which Aldrin and Armstrong took off just a few hours ago, is right at the edge of daylight and darkness on the inside of the crescent at the lunar equator. And they should be coming over that area very shortly while carrying out this docking maneuver. Boy, we're really getting a noisy signal. I doubt if we could understand very much of anything in that. A very large amount of noise. That's almost as though we had lost lock completely. One comment there I could barely hear. I believe it was from Neil Armstrong. It's quite possible that by now the astronauts have already connected the spacecraft and could be going about locking them together, latching them together. First comes what is called a soft dock or latch. Mike, there was one transmission. Neil Armstrong said, "Okay, we're all yours, Columbia." Mike Collins says, "Okay, I have thrusters." He mentioned some thrusters he had activated. I assume by pumping up cabin pressure, that means they are docked. Mike said he was pumping up cabin pressure in the command module. And I assume that Neil's phrase, "Okay, Columbia, we're all yours," meant that he was becoming passive at that point once the latches had been closed together. The astronauts are too busy going about their own tasks there on their own to realign this communication system. Nobody in mission control seems to be worried about it. They're letting them go about the duties alone, uninterrupted. All of the flight dynamics. Mike said he thought it was rather pretty. He thought things were pretty steady there during the docking. Did it appear to be? Neil Armstrong with Mike Collins. I'll stand by and I'll try to translate this. Mike asked, "Did it appear to be jerking around during the retract cycle?" Mike said that on his communications he got a horrible squeal. We also heard Neil Armstrong say, yeah, he agreed that it seemed to jerk around during the retract cycle. Mike's calling Houston.
Apollo 11, Houston, go.
He's asking for some oxygen flow information.
You want to go ahead and adjust your O2 flow until it just goes off the peg. And then crank the direct O2 valve back down about 5 degrees. Over.
Mission Control giving this information to Mike Collins in Columbia.
Okay, Ron, thank you.
So you were ready for that one, weren't you? They knew exactly the direction to, the instruction to pass along to Collins. The transmission's still very scratchy, but we can hear Mike's voice cutting through this din. We heard Neil Armstrong agree that the spacecraft appeared to jerk around a bit during the retract cycle after the soft dock as the two latches moved, as other mechanisms up in that probe and drogue assembly began to draw the two spacecraft into what is called a hard dock configuration. And Neil said that he did see his attitude thrusters actuate slightly and cause some jerking motion.
I believe we are flowing oxygen, but the gauge is just pegged full scale low.
The gauge is pegged full scale low. He cycled the O2 flow rate, the oxygen flow rate, as instructed. This is in order to get the right differential between the command module tunnel and the lunar module tunnel so that the hatch can be opened more easily. Collins says he's going into the tunnel to check.
Columbia, Houston, I have a new LEM wait for you whenever you're ready to copy.
A new wait for the LEM after all of this thruster firing. They should know what the mass is they have attached to the nose of Columbia now.
Not right now, Ron. Remind me of it later, would you please?
Roger, we'll stand by.
I believe this is capsule communicator Ron Evans at this point. That Mike Collins asked to hold that information until later. The capsule communicators in the middle row of flight directors, the men in the trench in the flight dynamics consoles down in virtual darkness, down in the front row, are watching very carefully the trajectory of the two craft as they go across the lunar surface at 4,000 kilometers per hour, some 110 to 11 kilometers above the surface, both of them still in orbit around the moon. Trans-Earth injection comes about 6 hours from now, I believe. We will check on that for you to let you know when TEI will occur. Hours 57, Greenwich Mean Time, some 7 hours from now. The communication, again, very, very scratchy, very difficult to understand. We're trying to bring it in so you can hear any of the conversation. Hopefully some of it will be legible to you, wherever you may be listening. That trans-Earth burn, some 7 hours from now. In Mission Control, there has been no attempt yet to ask the astronauts to realign their high-gain antennas for clearer transmission. We're listening very carefully to all of this noise in one ear, and I'm trying to translate it for you, or interpret it. If we can understand the words. Mike Collins is easier to understand because his voice, when he raises his voice just a bit, it really cuts through the noise quite well.
This is Apollo Control. communications are somewhat scratchy with Apollo 11. Columbia and Eagle now reunited to become Apollo 11 again. Our best estimate on the time of docking was some 3 minutes after the pre-mission time of 128 hours. Continuing to monitor this 27th lunar orbit for the two-way communications between the two spacecraft.
Go ahead with your damp
please. Roger, your LAM weight, 5785.
This information is being passed up by Mission Control. The instruction, the request was given from Apollo 11 to go ahead with the DAP up, DAP load, the digital autopilot load. So we will hear some engineering figures going up. That's Mike Collins in the command module, acknowledging the figures and reading back considerable amount of this data relayed verbally from capsule communicator to astronaut. Boy, that's about the noisiest signal I've ever heard on one of these flights in which we could, through which we could still barely read some of the transmissions. I'm a bit surprised that the mission control hasn't asked them to align their antennas a bit better by now. It apparently is much more important to Gene Kranz and Glenn Lunny and Cliff Charlesworth that they let the pilots go ahead and continue working on their own. Our clear verbal communications with them being of secondary importance to the flight directors themselves. Things are rather quiet there in Mission Control. Most of the men are sitting at their consoles watching telemetry data come in. Obviously, the telemetry looks okay coming from the command module, Columbia, and from the lunar module, Eagle. And you heard the voice of Apollo Control during this period of time, Terry White, say that now the two spacecraft being connected together, we can call the whole mass Apollo 11 in radio communications. I believe Mike was going to check the hatch mechanism, and then he came back and asked for a DAP load, the digital autopilot. He exchanged information with the capsule communicator on that. And then all has been silent since that time, just a moment or two ago. We would get loss of signal again. Mike Collins.
I understand you're doing the leak check. Missed anything after that?
The leak check is complete, and I'm proceeding with opening the hatch jump valve.
The procedure is complete, and he is proceeding with the opening of hatch countdown, going through the procedures necessary before the hatch is actually opened. That was Mike Collins in the mothership in the command module. We've heard nothing further from either Neil Armstrong or Buzz Aldrin in the lunar module, Eagle, in the ascent stage now, connected with the command craft. The rendezvous and docking has been completed. The astronauts are now back up, connected to the spaceship that has the heat shield for a safe re-entry into the Earth's atmosphere. This occurred at 128 hours, 3 minutes approximately after liftoff from Cape Kennedy. 128 hours, 3 minutes into the flight. That was about 12 minutes ago. And since that time, we've heard very little from the lunar module. and just an occasional comment or request of Mission Control from Mike Collins. During this period of time after docking, the command pilot in the lunar module doffs his helmet and gloves and temporarily stows them. So does the lunar module pilot, as a matter of fact. In the command module, Mike Collins initially pressurizes the command and service module to 5.5 pounds per square inch. He disables some of the thrusters, and we heard him acknowledge B3 and C4. He adjusts the oxygen flow rate up to 6 tenths of a pound per hour. He pressurizes the tunnel into the lunar module, that portion of the tunnel which before docking was exposed to space. Now that the two craft have docked and latched together and sealed together, there is an area there in the tunnel which is still in vacuum, and so vents must be opened to pressurize that tunnel to 3 pounds per square inch. Then Mike Collins must check that tunnel area for leaks, then equalize the command module and lunar module delta pressure between the two craft. He will inform the lunar module when the pressure has been equalized, then remove the hatch and stow the probe and drogue. Verify the latches between the craft, and then he will pass some bags and a brush through to the limb. And possibly you've heard reported already that there is considerable cleanup activity scheduled in the lunar module. The astronauts will do quite a bit of vacuuming and brushing off of lunar material that they don't want to bring back inside the command module with them. While all this is going on over in the lunar module, after doffing helmets and gloves, still inside the space suits, though not pressurized, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin will temporarily stow these helmets and gloves there in the limb. They will open the limb hatch and remove and stow the probe and drogue there. Buzz Aldrin assists the command pilot in effecting all of this, and they retrieve the following items, quite a number of them, through from the command and service module after the tunnel is open: helmet stowage bags, sample rock containers. There's considerable material to be passed through to the command and service module.
Rhett Turner?
The sample, contingency sample. Yes, Bill?
We're coming nearer to the end of this long period of some 29 hours of continuous broadcasting, and we are switched in now, our Apollo News Center in Washington. I thought perhaps all of us here, Norman Guerin, my VOA colleague, you, Rhett Turner, in Houston, and our NASA colleagues, John Hammersmith and William Land, in these last few minutes, might, think back to the beginning of this long period of broadcast, to about 17 hours 30 on Sunday, to these momentous events that have been taking place. Norm Guerin?
Bill, looking back, I think perhaps for me the highlights of the mission were at confirmation of touchdown, and then while sitting in the studio watching that silhouetted figure take the first step on the moon's surface.
John Hammersmith, what are some of your thoughts as we come to the end of this 29 hours?
Well, Bill, it both seems like the end of a long, long path that started back in 1961 for me, and I also have the feeling, and I hope, that it's just the beginning to bigger and better things in space.
We should mention to our listeners that John Hammersmith is in what we call the Advanced Manned Missions Program, looking way ahead, aren't you, John?
Yes, that's why I hope this is the beginning.
And to you, Bill Land, who You were Apollo missions engineer on, which mission? I've forgotten now.
Was it on Apollo 9.
Apollo 9, yes.
We've come a long way since Apollo 9, and that was just a short time ago. But my thoughts are, as I tried to express yesterday when the landing took place, I think that if ever the words were relevant, they are now, that we're truly opening a new world of exploration, and now we have to go forward and make further progress based upon these first footfalls on a new planet.
Well, Rep Turner, you followed this momentous flight, first from Cape Kennedy, and now, of course, from the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston. Perhaps the climax of the flight has passed. We still have a couple of more rather important events, that trans-Earth injection later, about 7 hours from now, early in the morning, Tuesday morning, and of course the splashdown in the mid-Pacific on Thursday. What have been some of your thoughts over this long period?
Well, I recall at this moment John Glenn's remarks on that interview with Voice of America about what we're really doing is opening a whole new world of transportation. That's what Columbus did in opening what would be considered a transcontinental mode of transportation, and his discovery of this continent. From then on, shipping really came into its own in a new way. It, of course, has, to me, it's been a very logical, technological achievement. It's hard for me to be in awe that this is the time and that this was the mission to go to the moon, because I've watched the technological process developed to the point where there was no question in my mind that this was the mission which should do the next logical step along this step-by-step way, and that was effect a touchdown. But backing way back off, one must feel that truly we things called Homo sapiens, mankind himself, is no longer restricted to this tiny blue and white ball in the cosmos, that for the first time since the beginning of all time, we are capable of going beyond, of physically going beyond, and certainly man will do that in the future. Where we take ourselves from there depends upon our own civility and how well we live among ourselves. I'm Rhett, most impressed with that fact.
Rhett, you've all but walked up to a kind of a remark that somebody made, and it was attributed to Wernher von Braun. And whether or not he actually made it, I don't know. But
I can
nevertheless,
tell you,
do you remember the remark?
I can tell you what I heard him say down at the Cape right after launch.
Yes, rather than compare it to Columbus, he compared it to the opening of the Renaissance.
I heard him go one step beyond that. He said this event is the most important event since aquatic animals first crawled from the waters of the deep onto land. That truly is a thought provoker.
I think what's pointed out by these statements is that as everyone looks deeper into the significance of this, they find that it is it does have greater significance, and the important thing now is that we continue looking forward and we continue to explore, and we don't rest on our laurels at this point.
Looking back myself,
here's Apollo Control, Bill.
One last report.
Noisy communications here on the 27th Lunar Revolution. 39 minutes remaining until Apollo 11 goes behind the moon. We'll leave the circuit up and try to monitor the conversation between the two spacecraft or between Apollo 11 and the ground for the remainder of this pass.
So the very noisy transmission continues from Mission Control.
I suppose
everything is well.
The thing that impressed me greatly over this 29-hour period was the fact that we were able to follow this through the electronics media, the radio and later the television, so closely. It was breathtaking to see that figure, the first step on the surface of the moon, to watch them hopping, bouncing about the moon, chatting very easily, It was as if I were watching, I think I remarked to one of my colleagues, an early science fiction movie that I had seen very often as a boy. Well, with the successful redocking of Apollo 11's Eagle and Columbia, the Voice of America comes to the end of some 29 hours of continuous broadcast coverage. It began on Sunday at 17 hours 30 GMT as we followed the Eagle lunar landing craft through its descent maneuvers and successful landing on the moon at 20 hours 18 GMT. Then the 21 hours and 36 minutes on the surface of the moon that included men's first walk on the lunar surface for a period of about 1 hour and 36 minutes. Astronaut Neil Armstrong took that first historic step onto the surface at 2 hours 56 GMT Monday morning. Then, later Monday, we brought you the live description of a very critical phase of the Apollo 11 flight, the firing of the ascent engine to take the Eagle landing craft off the surface for a safe rendezvous with Columbia, the mother spacecraft. The next critical phase of the flight will be a firing of the main engine of the command spacecraft Columbia to take the craft out of lunar orbit and send it on its path back to Earth. That is scheduled now for early Tuesday morning at 4 hours 57 Greenwich Mean Time. Our VOA worldwide coverage will begin at 4 hours 30 Greenwich Mean Time. We will continue to interrupt our regular programming to bring you full status reports on this continuing flight of Apollo 11. That flight will end on Thursday, July 24th, at approximately 12:51 our time. That would be about 16 hours 51 Greenwich Mean Time. My thanks to my VOA colleagues Norman Guerin and Rhett Turner, and to our guest NASA experts John Hammersmith and William Land. This is William McCrory at VOA's Apollo News Center.
This program has come to you from the United States of America.